Though Sherry Tepper is the author of more than 15 science fiction and fantasy novels, her writing career didn't take off until the 1980s when she was in her 50s. Tepper admits that she continually pounds on the same themes: oppression of women, environmental catastrophe, and authoritarian societies. In one novel, The Family Tree, a resurgent nature fights back. Her new book, The Visitor, takes place on Earth hundreds of years after it was hit by an asteroid. Though much of civilization has been destroyed, a small band of renegades tries to save it. Sherry Tepper and her husband live outside Santa Fe, New Mexico, where they run a guest house. She grew up in Colorado, where she first discovered science fiction.
When I was about 10 years old, I was born into a family that lived out in the country, and there were no other children around anywhere. And, of course, this was well pre-television. And so my main enjoyment when I wasn't out just wandering around was books. And I found magazines, wonderful magazines full of fantastic, weird, marvelous stories.
These are like Amazing.
Amazing, Astounding, you know, all of those that went way, way back, Weird Tales. And my father, who went into Denver to work every day, worked at an office where the bookmobile from the Denver Library stopped. And so every week he picked me up an armload of books and brought them home. And next week he took them back. And I had a lovely diet of fantasy and science fiction, so many names I can't even remember who now at this point. But it was my lifeblood. I just loved it.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed about many of your stories is they often have apocalyptic themes. But it started me thinking that there is this whole tradition of apocalyptic, dystopian, negative utopian, that is, fiction. And some of these books we know well, you know, like 1984 and Animal Farm, and there are others like We by Zamyatin, and there are all these movies we've seen like Blade Runner and Brazil. But, you know, did any of this notion of dystopia, negative utopia, hit you as you were growing up? Any of these themes?
Being out in the country, as I say, and being a reader, sometimes I ran out of things to read. And the ones that we had in our own library, the books that we had in our own library, were books that my father had had as a child or as a young man. And, of course, among them were all of the child's stories out of the classics, you know, the Greek and Roman myths, and also a large print and very copiously illustrated Bible. And I read the Bible all the way through, skipping the dull parts for the stories. And I read it all the way through probably 12 or 13 times by the time I'd reached teenage. And the book of Revelations, I think, is extremely strong. And it's very strong in our heritage. Book of Revelations leads to a great deal of our post-apocalyptic thinking.
So the Bible, more than any of this history of science fiction and utopia, led you to sort of think about doing it yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I also noticed that all those apocalyptic themes that I remember reading, which were all about nuclear disaster, now they seem to have been superseded by ecological disasters. And what I notice in your work is that you often take ecological themes, ecological disaster themes, and use them. Why?
I lived in the country. I lived on a farm where there was a river and a marsh and a bosque, as they say down here in New Mexico, a woods along the edge of the river. And it was alive with birds and it was alive with small animals. And for a lonely child, it was very much a paradise. When I left that place and then returned to it some years later, the river had been rip-wrapped because it was going to flood and ruin the golf course across the other side of it where the forest had once been.
Excuse me, but what does rip-wrap mean? I'm sorry.
That's where they line it with stones on both sides to make a channel. They dig it out and they put stones all along the side so that the river can't spread out. They often do it through cities and through towns to keep the river from spreading out. they drained the swamp for the same reason, because it's in the way. And the trees weren't there anymore, and the marsh wasn't there anymore, and the animals weren't there anymore, and the birds weren't there anymore. And I felt impoverished. I felt that somebody had taken something very valuable and very beautiful that I loved and just simply murdered it and done away with it. Now, that's just on a personal, possibly sentimental, emotional level. Multiply it by the billions, and you get what's happening to the world. And I feel very strongly about it. I hope that we don't wreck the world entirely, that we don't get to the point where it's just simply too late and we can't do anything about it.
My favorite book in this category of sort of ecological science fiction that you write is The Family Tree. And why don't you give me a quick summary of it before I start sort of asking some questions about it.
You would give me that one to try to summarize.
Well, because it's impossible, yes. It's actually, and you're right, it is an absolutely impossible book. Well, maybe I'll try. We have a mystery. We have a woman cop. She's in a failed marriage, and she finds a strange weed taking over. It's almost as if nature is attacking back. And she begins investigating the death of three geneticists who were experimenting on animals. And then you're on a wild and woolly ride to 3,000 years in the future. You're into some kind of strange tribal society that you don't really understand. There are incredible twists. And without giving away the ending, I will say that a secret children's code we all lived in school figures prominently, and by the end, you have to really think about issues of what makes a human being and what is the difference between a human being and an animal. Now, is that a reasonable summary?
You did that so much better than I could have.
Well, you know, I'm interested in this book because it's humorous. For one thing, it has a lot of humor in it. And interestingly enough, when I went into Amazon.com to look at the citizen reviews of this book, and one of the things that I saw in all the write-ups of this book from citizens, ordinary people who had read it, were things like, I love this book, except the politics. Many, many times in many, many different versions. And so I have to ask you, do you think that your writing is too polemical?
It undoubtedly is. If I could just get a polemectomy.
What?
A polemectomy.
Yes.
I've tried. It just will come out. I don't know. It's a disease. It's something I ought to have taken out, but if I could just figure out where it was.
And how did you catch this disease?
Well, let's see. At one time in my career, I was a preacher's wife, but I don't think that took. Oh, maybe I'm by nature somebody who wants to be a school teacher.
Didactic.
You want to teach.
Yeah. And what about working for Planned Parenthood? I heard you were
that
a speech writer. I bet that did a lot of it, right?
Speech writer, pamphlet writer, listen to me and do what I tell you or else kind of thing. You know, you will use birth control until you're 18. Please, dear, please do this for me.
So, I don't know. Do you think it hampers writing? Do you think it gets in the way of trying to tell a story?
Sometimes I'm sure it does. I thought probably that The Family Tree was the least political book I have ever written. It had very little politics in it, very little polemic in it. It was pretty much pure story. So if they didn't like that one for the politics, gee, I don't know what you do.
Sherry Tepper's new book is called The Visitor. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is science fiction and fantasy writer Sherry Tepper. Her new book is The Visitor. She's written many novels, including Grass, The Family Tree, and Raising the Stones. Does science fiction make it easier to talk about ideas?
It makes it easier to talk about ideas with people who aren't really very interested in talking about ideas.
Well,
it sneaks up on you.
Well, some have said that it's our only real literature of ideas right now. I mean, if you think of most of the novels that people read today, most of them are about relationships. Over and over and over in different kinds of ways. And the thing about science fiction, it's always seemed to me, is you can remake ways of loving and learning and living and structure cities and structure society. You can focus on sort of the larger issues of our lives.
You can focus on things that are terribly important that are so overlooked day to day that no one knows how important they are. We go through our lives accepting the surroundings around us and accepting what's happening around us because it's always been that way. And we've never really thought about what's happening, what the long run is going to accomplish if we go this way. And I have a book I'm working on now called The Dogs. And in The Dogs, the idea is, what if we encounter a race whose language is not spoken at all? What if we encounter a race whose entire language is conveyed in smells? What would we have to do to talk to these people or these creatures? And it gives you a new perspective on what communication is, and it gives you a new perspective on the relationship between unlike beings. And that, of course, is one of the things that I most hate about our wiping out so much of our wildlife, is that it gives us less chance to communicate with unlike beings.
You are in your 70s. You grew up in the West. And somehow or another, you ended up as an activist with Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
That doesn't sound typical for someone who is in their 70s today. How did you get that way?
How did you get to be an activist and a feminist, given your age? Let me tell you. Feminism kind of came late, but it came after the activism, quite frankly. I got into Planned Parenthood because of my concern with world population, which fits in beautifully with ecofeminism, of course, or eco-anything. And at the time that I got into Planned Parenthood, it was a very much simpler organization than it later became. And it was devoted mostly to providing birth control information and care to women who didn't know about it or couldn't find it or couldn't get it, all of which were things that I believed in very deeply. And at the time, it was a job. You know, how nice to have a job doing something you can believe in. And I got the job because I was a woman on her own with two children to support. So it all sort of fit together. I became an activist on that job because when you are confronted with the reality of the countries around the world and what they do to women, two books ago, I took the Taliban apart. This was before our little escapade in Afghanistan, for what they were doing to women. But there's culture after culture in the world where women are treated very little better, if as well as domestic animals.
But I'm wondering how you ended up coming to these views, given your own background. Was there anything in your background, your parents growing up, that led you to this, or was it just a sort of an aha moment?
It was a revelation. It was a series of revelations, little strokes of lightning hitting you on the top of the head. Somebody laying a hand across your back and saying, now listen to me, you know.
Sherry Tepper, thank you very, very much for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Sherry Tepper's new book is called The Visitor. Her other novels include The Family Tree, Beauty, and Grass.